this time the father reunited the family and left them in charge of the stepmother who did not take care of them. This is too much detail, I won't go into that. So she's the princess of the royal family of KwaZulu-Natal, King Goodwill Zwelithini's niece. She lives in Denmark, as I said, and she's also an author of the Zulu Princess Warrior, which I'm really excited to read. It sounds amazing. She's also a motivational speaker, which is something I really aspire to. So I hope to have this relationship develop in the future with Vaishnav Sena. I'll tell you a little bit about this program tonight. Vaishnav Sena, which is Sena actually means warrior as well. And Vaishnav means devotee, so we serve Lord Krishna. And the youth group here have basically come together under that element of growing Vaishnavism and trying to dedicate our lives to Krishna by learning how to be devotional and be warriors in service. And tonight happens to be Krishna book night, and this book that you see here is all about the pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here tonight we have His Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, and he's from New Zealand, and he's been a monk for more than I can count. I don't want to reveal his age, but he's forever youthful by soul. And tonight we're very fortunate to have him tell us a few stories about Krishna. And from my experience of being in the Hare Krishna movement, Maharaj tells stories in such a fantastic way that he takes you into another dimension altogether. So I'm glad that you are here and Maharaj is here and that all of you are here. And I hope that you can also just feel the silence in the story and allow your minds to go to a beautiful place where Krishna exhibits his loving pastimes with his devotees. I also want to present this garland to say thank you for coming and giving us the opportunity to serve you. We have a gift at the end of the evening for you that Maharaj has signed for you as well. So thank you again for coming and welcome.
She has a future in public speaking. Hare Krishna. Very good. Thanks for coming. I'm from New Zealand. We don't speak much Zulu there. But Siobhanga. Yeah. Seriously. Okay, well, everyone, devotees, friends, welcome. Thanks for coming, all of you. As Toshini Devi Dasi was saying, we are going to recount one or two, or we'll just see how the time goes, couple of stories, I imagine, maybe even three, from the pastimes of Lord Krishna, from the Krishna book itself. So, I thought that we could focus on a particular kind of aspect of the pastimes of Krishna. It's something which I've studied a lot and even presented quite a lot, actually, for about what it must be, last 25 years or even a little more. This is about the demons in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. Yeah. Yes. As presented in the Krishna book, Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, which is presented in the form of the Krishna book. I don't know if any of you really studied the book from this specific perspective, it's really very interesting that Krishna, when Krishna comes to this world, Krishna comes from time to time in cosmic terms, from time to time through the millennia. And as he explains in Bhagavad Gita, when he comes, well, he explains why he comes. Why he comes. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. This is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 8. So Krishna says there, in order to deliver the devotees or the pious, not just deliver them, but to give them his association and his very loving association, that's Paritranaya Sadhunam. And then on the other hand, Vinashaya cha duskritam, to destroy the Sanskrit term is duskritina, which is translated there as demons. We use this term, demon. You know, when I first heard the term demon used in Krishna consciousness, which was just when I was first becoming acquainted with it, which was less than 50 years ago. It was like 47 years ago, perhaps. So I heard this term demon. I thought, wow, demon. What does this mean? I mean, who are these people? What do they look like? What sort of people are they? And I had this little vision popped into my head of someone who I thought looked like, now I don't know if you're up with this is from my childhood actually. There was a famous comic character, Hot Stuff. No, you've not heard of Hot Stuff. You heard of Spooky, the friendly ghost. Oh, okay. And then who's Spooky? Who's the other one? He's the other guy. But they're all pretty friendly. But Hot Stuff is one of their friends. He's all red. And he's got horns. And he's got a little trident. He's one of those guys. And I thought that, you know, when I heard this term demon, I thought, wow, someone with horns and a trident who's going to skewer you, something like that. But it's not exactly that. Really, in a broad sense, this term demon means someone who is like staunchly anti-God, staunchly, not just, well, anti, okay, like aggressively anti-God, and, you know, like an anti-God activist, you could say. Yeah, he's really trying to push that agenda. So, this is actually how the term is used. And, you know, on the other hand, you can say such people basically by definition are staunchly materialistic, exploitative, abusive, and looking out just for themselves and not caring about other people, just caring about themselves. So, Krishna then in that verse, Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, verse 8, says that along with protecting and like encouraging and inspiring the devotees and the pious and the nice people, the good people. He destroys these nasty people. Yeah, nasty people. Real nasty. And Dharma Samsthapanataya, he reestablishes principles of religion which have been lost, or if not lost, but they've been under attack by these demoniac people. So in the Krishna book, while Krishna, you know, there are three sections in the Krishna book. First is Krishna in Vrindavan, then Krishna in Mathura, then Krishna in Dwarka. Up to chapter 40, it's Krishna in Vrindavan. So these demons I'm referring to then, they appear in the first 40 chapters of the Krishna book. And to be quite honest, a great percentage, a majority, I don't know if it's like 60 or 70%, it's something like that, of those first 40 chapters, Krishna and Vrindavan, they're focusing on him killing these demons. Yeah. And in those chapters, there are, let me just check, it's about 20-something, 21. There's 21 of them. Although it is a fact, and Prabhupada, explains that there were more than just these 21. In fact, the way Prabhupada explains it is that particularly when Krishna was going out herding the cows, because that was the family occupation, you could say, or just the way of life, looking after the cows. So Krishna started herding the cows when he, just after he had turned, would you believe, he started by herding the calves. Actually, there's a nice description. It's in a commentary on the Krishna book on the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So you won't exactly find it in here, at least the details. But when Krishna had just turned three, and he decided, I want to get into our family occupation, what we do. I want to herd the cows. So he told his parents, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, I'm taking out the cows with my friends. All right. Yes or yes? Anyway, and particularly Mother Yashoda, as mothers are, she was just, you know, you can't do that, you're too small. The cows are big, and you're just three. But Krishna said, no, I am going to do it. And actually his father, Nanda Maharaj, he thought it was nice. It was very nice. But how to do it? Because it was a fact. Krishna was small and the cows were big. And there were 900,000 of them. So there was a negotiation. Krishna's a good negotiator. And he got to take out the calves. It was agreed. So therefore, on the second What is it? Astami. The second Astami means the second, a lunar month from full moon to, because the lunar month begins on the actual full moon, until the day just immediately before the next full moon, which is the beginning of the next lunar month. So those lunar months are divided into two halves. And each half has a first and a second and a third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth day. The eighth day is called the Astami. Asta meaning eight in Sanskrit. So the eighth day, the second eighth day, it is called actually Gopastami. Then there was a big ceremony, a festival, because Krishna is getting into the family tradition. He's taking out the calves. And lots of the village people came and gave Krishna different items, different things that he could use in herding the calves. This is when, incidentally, Krishna was given his first flute. He is famous for having a flute, playing the flute. And this is when he was given his first flute. And his mother, Yashoda, came forward and gave him a pair of these quaint little shoes. If you've been to India, you may have seen pointy toe, which turns up. And they're often multicolored. And even today, they make them. You see them quite often. So she had a pair of these quaint little pointy-toed, colorful, multicolored shoes. And she gave them to Krishna here. You know, someone gave him a flute, as we mentioned. Someone gave him a buffalo horn. Someone gave him a stick for, you know, directing the cows. Someone gave him a rope. Sometimes you have to sort of pull them. And Mother Yashoda, his mother, gave him a pair of these very, you know, very well, quaint and just shoes with a lot of character, and said, look, take these, wear these, because you're going out and, you know, you're going to be going through the forests and over the hills, and there are thorns and there are rocks, and so take these shoes. And she told Krishna, you're going to be out there in the sun. In that part of the world, the Vrindavan area, they have a, you could say, serious summer. Here in Cape Town, summer. It's almost like a winter. It only gets up to 35 degrees. Wow, it's nothing. It's cool. There it goes up to 50. Often in the summer, it's like living in a sauna almost. So she gave him a little, also multicolored, with little mirrors on it, umbrella. And a servant to carry the umbrella, because she said, look, you're going to be out in the sun all day. So you need this. You need this. Take it. Take them. Shoes, umbrella, take them. Krishna said, no. No. Krishna said, I will only take these shoes if you provide four similar shoes for each calf. And Mother Yashoda said, Krishna, listen, they're animals. You know, they don't need these things. But Krishna said, no. And there must be a servant with an umbrella for each calf. It's thousands, you know, we're talking like 3.6 million shoes. 900,000 servants with umbrellas. So Krishna said, no. And Krishna said, I will not take anything better than the cows. If you don't give these same things for the cows, I will not take them. Because the cows are our life. That's, you know, how we live. It's how we live. Essentially from dairy products. That's how we live. So they're our lives. Without them, we're dead. They're our lives. And he said, they are our, like our religion. So we cannot take anything better than the cows. And in Zulu culture, there's also, right, the cows are of great significance, I've been told. So then Krishna spoke a very important little sutra. Sutra means just, it's not like a verse, it's just a little line which expresses something important in a very succinct way, to the point, but very brief. In Sanskrit, dharmo rakshati rakshitaha. Dharma means like religion, or not just religion in the sort of ceremonial sense, but religion in the sense of that which is the foundation of your life, the sort of the guiding light in your life in all respects, in a sort of what we would call religious sense, or what people would call religious sense, in an occupational sense, yeah, in terms of defining your diet and your, in a cultural sense. So dharma rakshati, rakshati means he or she, rakshati. Raksha, do we have any rakshas here? Are you a raksha? You're not a raksha. I know who you are. Don't tell me you're a raksha. Do we have any rakshas here? Anyway, I think you know some rakshas. Raksha means protect. And rakshati means he or she who protects. So dharmo rakshati, that person, he or she, who protects dharma or religion, the underlying sort of substructure which is supporting your life, rakshitaha, is protected by that dharma, by that religion. So in this way, dharma, or in a broad sense, it's a broad sense, religion. One who protects religion is protected by that same religion. In other words, it is a self-sustaining process. You don't need anything from outside. Yeah. Anyway, that's kind of by the way, actually. What I'm going to do, though, like I said, there are all these demons. And I want to tell you at least one, maybe a couple, of stories of some of these demons. They were mystical demons. They were magical demons. They were human beings. But because of their magical powers, they could transform themselves. Now, don't start talking about the Transformers, okay? We have heard about these things. I may be you know, in early old age. I'm being charitable to myself. But I have heard about these things. I have heard about these things. All right. I'm sort of withered a bit. Not too much, but to some degree. So these people, they could transform their bodies into other, really other shapes and forms, because they had mystical powers. Let me just very briefly tell you one very short little story about, it's a very minor mystical power story from Vrindavan, like, not exactly now, but maybe 30 years ago. In our Goshala, where we keep our cows in Vrindavan, there's a whole lot of cows there, I don't actually know how many, but there's a good number. One cobra came in. And at the back of that is like the main area where they gather before they're milked. So at the back there was a little shed. It wasn't even really a real shed. It was only about a meter, maybe 4 feet or 4.5 feet high. So you couldn't walk into it. You had to kind of crouch down and half crawl into it. And the cobra took up residence there. And now there's all these cows and cobras, you know, they rightfully have a bad reputation. So what did they do? They called the local snake charmer. And in he came. And the snake charmer, the cobra was inside this thing, you know, it's like this high, and it's maybe, I don't know, a couple of meters deep, something along those lines, and maybe a meter or so wide. And he went in on his, do you understand when I say squatting on his haunches? You understand? Yeah. Sort of right down, and but still kind of walking forward, but right down. And he went. And the devotees were waiting there, and they thought, my God, what's going to happen? We're going to have to pay for his funeral if he doesn't make it. Anyway, so after some minutes, he was in there for some minutes, this little man, he came out backwards, squatting down, kind of, you know, walking backwards, but down. And the cobra came out like 6 inches or maximum 1 foot, followed him out as he reversed out. So they're coming out. And the cobra's just looking him in the eyes. And he's just looking the cobra in the eyes. Then the snake charmer, he took one beady. You know what a beady is? If you don't, it's probably better. They're really evil little. I mean, all cigarettes are evil, but they're really evil little cigarettes they have in India. So he lit up a beady right in front of this cobra, blew some smoke in the cobra's face, turned around to the devotees, put his hand out and said, 5 rupees. And they gave him 5 rupees. And he just gently took the cobra by the neck and took it away. It's some special potency. Some special potency in the mind, because otherwise you can't deal with those creatures in that way. But now these demons, ho ho ho, talk about mystical powers. So I'm going to tell you first of all about Bakasura, who was a human being, yeah, he's like a magician, a real magician. And he transformed himself into the shape of a, I think we would say, a stork. You understand? Semi-aquatic bird. Long neck, big, long beak. You know what I mean. But big, but really gigantic. Huge. Huge, I mean, like, as big as the house. So, this happened. This happened, if you've ever been to Vrindavan, this happened not far from Darshana. Have you been there? No? Why? Okay, anyway, you must go. All right. So not far from Darshana. It's actually quite close to a village near Darshana, which is called Anjanoka. Yeah, there's a kind of swampy area there where these, a lot of these birds gather. So there he was, and Krishna and his brother Balaram and the cowherd boys and all the calves, they went there. It's kind of swampy area with some pools and even some kind of small lakes. And they wanted the calves to drink from one small lake. But then they noticed this large looking and really, you know, nasty looking stork who's just eyeing them. Yeah, looking at them, particularly looking at Krishna. So the cowherd boys saw this stork. It was Bakasura. And they were very frightened. And that stork, would you believe? Relax, okay. It's all right. They can manage. Just give your attention, all right? So, you know what that stork did? It grabbed Krishna in its beak and tried to swallow Krishna. Very dramatic scene. All the cowherd boys panicked. But, thank you. Krishna, you know, Krishna is the source of the Brahma Jyoti. You heard of the Brahma Jyoti? Nimitta, right? I found out what it means. It means cause, Nimitta, yeah. Nimitta, cause, like the cause of creation. Okay. So now the thing is, Krishna is the source of the Brahma Jyoti, which is the effulgence. The effulgence, sometimes they say, let there be light. Or, yeah, we should, even some say, we should merge with the light. Have you seen the light? The light. Doesn't mean that light. It means an eternal, unlimited light which is illuminating all of reality. Yeah. And that light, the Brahma Jyoti, is emanating from the body of God. His body is self-effulgent. So, now, any light, basically, like, if you put your hand up against, you know, like here, see, whoops, it's hot. Light and heat, these two, basically where you get light, generally you get heat. So that Brahma Jyoti, the effulgence of Krishna, is hot. And when, control yourself, all right? Take it easy, relax. So when Bakasura tried to swallow Krishna, that Krishna is the source of that Brahma Jyoti, that spiritual light, Bakasura experienced the body of Krishna as being extremely hot. So he spat out Krishna. But then he tried to bite him and, you know, sort of attack him by biting him. And Krishna, our hero, Krishna, I mean, just keeping it sort of on the brief side. Well, let me just add a little point. When the Krishna and the cowherd boys and Balaram and the calves arrived there and they saw this big, really big stork, they saw that he looked like a mountain peak which has been struck by lightning and the top has been knocked off. How does that sound? Which leaves you with a mountain with a flat top. Yeah. So he looked like the top, which had been knocked off and then came crashing down and down and eventually arrived at the bottom, kind of smashed up. So Bakasura looked kind of smashed up. Okay. And also, let me throw another thing into the mix. All these demons represent, each one represents a particular, in Sanskrit we say, anatha, unwanted thing or dangerous personal quality, which can slow down your spiritual development or stop it, you know, real nasty things. Bakasura represents hypocrisy, being two-faced, saying one thing but doing another thing. You all know the idea. Okay, so back to Bakasura. He's trying now to, he's snapping at Krishna. And you know what Krishna did, devotees? Fasten your seatbelts. Are you ready? Krishna grabbed the two halves of the beak and opened his mouth and opened his mouth and opened his mouth further until, if you're squeamish, block your ears, until the stork's face and head and everything split in two. Haribol. And that was the end of Bakasura. Yes. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who was the spiritual master of our Prabhupada, he makes the point, talking about this incident, he makes the point that Bakasura was, it represents hypocrisy, which we sometimes call being two-faced, right? And by splitting his head, Krishna gave him two faces. How's that? Hari Bol. Sure, that's a bit dramatic, isn't it? Should be what? X-rated. Only 16 or over. Now, here's an interesting little point. That's all straight from the Krishna book. It's all there. There's a chapter which is dedicated to this. But you remember, I want to just now bring in something which is mentioned in the like commentaries, because you have the scriptures, Krishna book is scripture. But then great devotees, very great devotee scholars, have written commentaries, explanations, basically, explaining what the different things mean and giving deeper insights into these incidents. So in one such commentary, it's kind of like a commentary, it's called Gaga Samhita, there is an explanation of why Bakasura, when they first saw him, why it is said he looked like the peak of a mountain which was struck by a lightning bolt and knocked off and fell down and came smashing down and ended up at the bottom. Means, you know, all smashed up. He looked smashed up, Bakasura. Bhagavatam and the Krishna book doesn't go into detail about how it was like that. But Gaga Samhita does. Listen to this. And you're going to have to fasten your seatbelts for this too. Yeah. So, as Bakasura was coming, approaching Vrindavan, on his way, it was his mission to attack Krishna. That was why he was there. He wanted to attack Krishna. So the demigods, the higher controllers of the universe, people who control things like the weather, Indra, Lord Indra controls rainfall, just like we have in Cape Town, there's a water department. And for what I understand, they had been struggling to do their job because the higher water department decided to withhold the supply. I think you know about that better than me. So Indra, first of all, Indra, understanding that this being is coming to attack our Lord Krishna. Aha. We're going to be thrown into darkness. Look at that. Is it more sort of atmospheric or is it just dark? Oh, okay. That's clever. Okay, so just relax. It's all right. So Indra, the Lord of the Rains, and the King of Heaven, he came, understanding what was the mission of Bakasura, he came and attacked Bakasura with his thunderbolt. That is his characteristic weapon, his thunderbolt. But Bakasura, it knocked him to the ground, but Bakasura got up again and continued. Then Lord Brahma is the person, he is like the engineer of the universe. He puts the planets together, species of life, populates the universe. So Lord Brahma, the creator or engineer, he struck Bakasura on the head with his weapon, what he carries, it's a type of a rod. It's called the Brahma Danda, the stick of Lord Brahma. And he struck him with that on the head, which knocked him unconscious for about an hour. But then he got up again and proceeded towards Vrindavan. Then Lord Shiva came. You've all heard of Lord Shiva. Yes, he's a popular fellow. He came with his trident, his characteristic weapon. He is in charge of different things. One thing is the destruction of the universe when the time comes. So Shiva struck him with his trident and cut off one wing. But the demon recovered and carried on. You know, he's a tough guy, this Bhagasura. So then Vayu, who was in charge of wind, movements of air, Vayu came and struck him with his wind weapon. We don't know exactly how that works, but it's, you know, it's pretty powerful. The Bhagasura flew away with his one wing. Yeah. Then let's see. Oh, Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, the person who judges people immediately after they die, he came with his stick. He also has a, like a rod. It's called the Yama Danda. And he hit Bhagasura with the Yama Danda. But the Yama Danda broke. And Bhagasura continued. Then Surya, the personality controlling the sun, attacked him with 100 fiery arrows, but still he did not die. Durga, the presiding deity of material nature, attacked him with her sword. You know, she is generally depicted with 8 arms. She has a sword. She has a chopper. She has a trident. She has a spear. She has something more like a knife and various other things. And she rides on a lion. So, yes, she attacked him, but he just carried on. Then Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, struck Bhagasura with a sword and cut off the other wing. But still he did not die. And he carried on. Then Soma attacked him with his ice weapon. Tormented by the cold, the demon fainted. But then again stood up and carried on. Can't keep a good man down. Prabhupada, our spiritual master, he was flying on an aeroplane. It was many years ago, it was like in the 70s. And he was in first class and he was in the first row. And in those days, they didn't have, you know, the personalized little screen where you can watch whatever you like at your own seat. They just had one big screen. And it was right in front of Prabhupada, you know, just like practically in his face. And they were playing a David Niven World War II movie. Have you heard of David Niven? Okay, don't worry. Well, he has, because he's from my era. Yeah. You haven't missed too much. David Niven is always the hero in the movies where the British are fighting the Germans. Oh, yeah. Big hero. So Prabhupada's sitting there and this war movie's playing, and Prabhupada's not really interested, but you've got to look somewhere. You know, so he was just looking at this sort of every now and then. And David Niven's going up the hill. And the enemy are up there, they're shooting. And, oh, David Niven gets shot, he goes down. Shame. But he gets up, picks up his gun. He's off again, up the hill. And then suddenly, oh, he goes down again. Oh, dear. But then he gets up again and picks up his gun and he's going up the hill again. And Prabhupada sort of dozed off in the middle of all this for just like 20 or 30 seconds. And then Prabhupada woke up again, just, you know, half a minute later. And there's David Niven. He's still going up the hill. And then he gets shot again. And Prabhupada turned to his assistant who was next to him, and in a very just nonchalant way said, "Oh, not dead yet." So similar with Bakasura. So, my gosh, then Agni, who is the presiding deity of fire, attacked him with his fire weapon and burned all his feathers to ashes. But he still didn't die. He carried on. Varuna tied him up. He oversees bodies of water. Tied him up with his ropes and dragged him along the ground, which hurt him, but he didn't die. Then Bhadrakali hit him on the head with her chopper and broke his head, and he fainted and went into a deep coma. But then he got up again and continued on. He shook himself and roared like a cloud. Then Kartikeya, who is the presiding deity of war, threw his Shakti weapon at him and cut off one of his feet. So just think about it. Poor Bakasura. No wings, no feathers, only 1 foot left. So then he turned around and he attacked the demigods. They had to run. And then he proceeded and he arrived in Vrindavan. And that's why he looked like a mountain peak which has been struck by a thunderbolt and then knocked down and come crashing down the mountain and finally smashes at the bottom. So that's the story of Bakasura. And that should be hopefully an impetus for us. Don't be hypocritical. Be simple. Be honest. Straightforward. Yeah. Be straightforward. They say, well, actually, you won't find it. It's in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Bali Maharaj says, this planet, you know, it's got all these people and animals and running around on top of it, people drilling holes in it. And Bali Maharaj says, this planet Earth can tolerate almost anything, but it cannot tolerate liars. Just think about that. Take that one home with you. Yeah, we should be honest and straightforward. Now, we have... Where is Toshini? Okay, we got... Well, how much time we got? 5 minutes? Okay, let me tell you another little story. Little one. It's not from the Krishna book, but it's a nice one. This is about Krishna when he was small. When Krishna was small, he was naughty. There's some parents here. Your children, when they were small, they were naughty sometimes, right? Am I right? Well, anyway, they were. So, it is said about Krishna when he was small. When Krishna was good, he was good. And when Krishna was naughty, he was good. Because whatever Krishna does, it's good. Even when he killed this Bakasura, Bakasura was liberated. He got salvation. Yeah. So whatever God does is good. Whatever Krishna does is good. Even if it appears bad by certain, whatever standards of regular society. So there was Krishna. This takes place in Nandagram. which is in the Vrindavan area, Krishna was being naughty. And Mother Yashoda didn't know what to do, how to control him. So then she got an inspiration. Aha, I know. I will frighten him. I will frighten him. I will make up a creature. Did you ever hear of the boogeyman? Do you have? Yeah, you heard of the boogeyman. My parents used to tell me about the boogeyman. Yeah, gotta watch out. So Mother Yashoda, she went to Krishna and said, listen, you had better be good. If you are not good, the how will get you. How, not how, but how. The how will get you. And Krishna said, the what? The how? What's a how? I never heard of a how. I've been living here for some time. What's a how? And Mother Yashoda said, oh, the how. He's very big. And he has big claws. And he loves eating naughty little boys. And Krishna was good for about 15 minutes. And then he started becoming naughty again. And Mother Yashoda told him, listen, don't forget, you forgot what I told you. Don't be naughty, because the how will get you. He has big fangs and three eyes, and he loves eating naughty little boys. And Krishna was very good for about 10 minutes. And then he started becoming naughty again. And again, Mother Yashoda told him, listen, you watch out. You just watch out. Because I heard, the how is coming. Yeah. And he's got long hair. And he dribbles from his mouth. And he loves eating naughty little boys. Anyway, Krishna went outside. Now, remember, Mother Yashoda just made up the how. A few minutes later, Krishna came running back. Mata! Mata! The how's coming! And Mother Yashoda said, what the how? No, and she told him, no, it's okay, just relax. And she started feeling bad. I frightened the boy. I made up this imaginary being. And he thinks it's real. And she told him, just relax, it's all right. There's no how. And Krishna said, no, there is a how. And he's coming. And Mother Yashoda said, listen, I just made up the how, okay? Just don't worry about it. There is no how. Just relax. I'm sorry I frightened you. And Krishna said, no! There is a how, and he's coming. And you know what happened? From around the corner came a how. Yeah. And Mother Yashoda couldn't believe it. Just couldn't believe it at all. But Krishna turned the how into stone. And actually there were six of them. There were six of them. Krishna turned them all into stone. And there they are. They kind of look like something like lions, but nastier. So there's Mother Yashoda now. She's just completely flabbergasted. What is this? There is no how. I made up the how. It doesn't exist. But now there's a how. What is going on? And Krishna, in a very serious way, Krishna said, if my mata, which means mother, if my mata says there's a how, then there's a how. Whatever my mata says is right. So anyway, you're all sort of a bit too old, but maybe not quite too old. Just remember that, all right? Just remember that, and you'll do well. You'll do very well. Yeah. So that's another little story about Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Krishna book ki. Hare Bol. Yes.